Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And over here, I'm Robert Winters. And it's still March 1st. And you know what they say about March?
In like a lion, out like a lamb.
Well,
Putin did sure come in like a lion a few days ago. So hopefully he does go out like a lamb. That would be great.
Right. I think the Russians come in as bears, though, don't they?
Oh, that's probably true.
Yeah, right. That's right. So
right. In like a bear.
So so anyway, some of the other things that came up as items, some of these things, items that were before this Cambridge City Council last night were basically punted, you know. So there is there will be a this order having to do with introducing a zoning amendment or a municipal ordinance zoning amendment. I think it's more of municipal ordinance than zoning, having to do with
zoning,
neighborhood conservation districts.
Right.
That actually was referred on a very split vote, which is very curious, the neighborhood and long-term planning committee.
To have a meeting, right.
Yeah, and which was, I thought that was interesting because to me, that was the only logical place to send it.
Yes.
Yet there were four votes, and the way they said no seemed like it was like a certain emphasis in the no.
Well, it was the three co-signers. They had to say no.
They didn't have to say no, because ultimately when you introduce an order or anything like that, you still refer it to a committee.
Yeah, but then it would make it look like their order was not, I don't know.
Well, I think maybe there's some who just wanted to kind of rush that one through to ordinance without, you know, the appropriate processing that I think something of this significance deserves. And it was no surprise to me that it was a sort of the diehard ABC people who were the ones who wanted to rush it through to ordinance right away without it being referred for any kind of review. There may have also been some issue because the chair of the Neighborhood Long-Term Planning Council is Councillor Carlone, who's sort of not, not of the body, as a famous Star Trek episode.
You keep talking about ABC, and there's more than four counselors that were endorsed by ABC.
Yeah, right, but there's sort of the inside trackers who are the I like to think of them as the do as you're told counselors. Uh-huh. And then they're the ones who are a little bit more independent thinkers, you know, who are capable of looking at the bigger picture. That includes people like Sumbul Siddiqui, and it certainly includes people like Paul Toner, you know, so who had the endorsement of that group, but I think are a lot more, you know, they're bigger thinkers basically than some of the others. So, so that'll get its day and we'll see where it goes. And, you know, as Charlie Sullivan of the Historical Commission has pointed out, it's like that ordinance, just like any other ordinance, needs to be reviewed periodically. But reviewing an ordinance to make it better
does not mean changing it all.
It doesn't mean disemboweling it, you know. So anyway, we'll see. You know, we live in very political times, so that's the way it is. So, so we'll see what happens. It was also an issue about, speaking of the charter aspect, about board, city council's newfound authority to review board appointments. There was also the newfound ability for them to initiate a charter review every 10 years, beginning this year.
Right.
And the city solicitor had opined on, possible ways in which a charter review committee of citizens could be formed. You know, I kind of intuitively get the sense that some of the counselors want to have as much control as possible in this. But they don't have a procedure settled on yet about how to do it. You know, and, you know, what will happen if, you know, somebody like if I were to say I'd like to be on this, whatever, will the ability to serve on a charter review committee come down to whose political sphere you live in, or will it come down to your expertise and some knowledge in the matter? And, time will tell, right?
Each counselor should nominate somebody from a list or something.
Well, you know, you can nominate, but ultimately I would imagine you still would need like a majority vote or something like True. That.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a difference between nomination and selection. So
that's true.
You know, and by the way, speaking of that little controversy about how you pick those people, there's the question about the screening committee, preliminary screening committee for the city manager search.
Yes.
You know, and they haven't quite said how that's going to happen either.
Well, aren't they now accepting nomination to be self-nominated?
I know that.
Open, right?
Did they open that today?
Oh, maybe it isn't open yet. I thought it was.
Whatever it is, they said there was some scope that needed to be drafted or something, but then, but presumably that would happen.
The selection committee for that committee has already been selected from the city councils.
There are four members Toner, of the city council who are part Zondervan, of that. Yes,
Azeem and
Toner.
I said Toner.
Toner, yeah, Toner, Azeem, and I forget. But anyway, it's four of them. You know, so we'll see. Let's see if they play fair. We'll see. But anyway, so those are some of the kind of more process things. I think in terms of substance, there was you tuned in, I believe, and I listened to there was a committee meeting on a finance committee just about a week or so ago.
Two weeks ago, they had the first one where there was no public comment, and then they had public comment last week.
Right, and what was kind of curious about that is I think it is a well-known fact, though I will certainly give a pass to a counselor who's brand new who may not know this. But anyone who has served on the city council for more than a year.
Yeah.
Knows that the budget process gets underway at the end of the summer, early fall, and by the time you get around to mm-hmm. February, it's already, you know, largely baked.
That was the issue of having a meeting to discuss that we have to get involved earlier. That's what Nolan and Carlon said.
Right. So I did hear last night there seemed to be some indication that the finance committee chairs were committed to sometime late this coming summer to start actually get it, you know, to whatever degree they want to have additional city council input into the crafting of the budget, that they would really have to do it pretty much like August, September, October, rather than February, March. Right. You know, so, but, you know, one of the things about that, which I find perplexing, is that, you know, city councilors pass orders throughout the year in which they express their desire for the manager to do certain things, to fund certain things, to prioritize certain things. They're doing it all the time. They get together, they form goals and objectives every once in a while and whatever. So this notion that somehow they have to get together like in August and September to tell the manager what they want.
Well, but in their defense, and this is, you know, they can put all the policy orders they want, but they don't always get responses back.
And they can get together at the end of the summer and the early fall and they can say what they want and they won't necessarily get responses either.
No, you know, but I think at least gives them more leeway. I don't know
that it really does. I think the one thing that matters, I think, if I was a city manager, I would say, where is their consensus? Okay, so to whatever degree there's a process that actually shows actual consensus, you know, then that's something the manager typically would respect. If it's a matter of what I used to call drive-by orders, which is sort of like, Mr. Manager, you do this, you know, it's sponsored by one or two people. Mm-hmm. Everything gets voted 9-0 anyway. So that doesn't mean a thing, right? You know, but it'd be different if in fact there was a concerted effort amongst counselors within the confines of the open meeting law, mind you, to actually say what they really wanted. You know, they could have been doing that all along. So, you know, so there seems to be just a little bit of a color of control here too. Like, you know, and I think that people do need to understand that there is a distinction between a legislative function and an executive function here. Even in the city of Boston or any place with a directly elected mayor, the mayor introduces the budget.
Right.
And the councilor hashes it out.
Right.
And yes, there's advice and consent and all of that stuff here. But, you know, the notion that somehow that the counselors would get together around a table and say, I think we ought to be putting 20 million in this and 10 million in that, that's kind of not the job. And I don't
know, but I think that
it shouldn't be.
But they should actually maybe be more together on what they do see as some priorities rather than coming up with these different policy orders all throughout the year.
You mean they should actually act as a cohesive body? That's a great idea, Judy. I think that would be wonderful.
But the other thing I wish people knew, and this has come up time and time again, is that people that don't know the system that well just feel like just because there's a policy order and just because it gets voted on, they think it's like set in stone. They don't realize it just means we're sending this to the city manager and the departments to have a comment on. And that should be more timely, but it's not a fait accompli, you know, and people think that's what it is.
So here I will say,
you have to do it, you know?
So since some people seem to think I know a few things about the charter, I'm going to actually say something about that, which is that one of the primary functions of city council orders is not to instruct the manager to do something. Right. It's simply the fact that, or any of the city department heads to do something. It's just that there is a strict felonious prohibition that says as a city councilor, you can't basically ring up the head of community development department and say, Ram, damn it, I insist you put X number of dollars in here and there. That's a felony.
Yeah, but what if they just had a conversation about putting
it? Well, you got to be careful about that because there's a certain amount of kind of, you're pressing it sometimes when you're having a conversation.
Right, but there's always been an art. I know Malin's brought this up sometimes through the term if you had consulted the department before, you wouldn't have put it this policy order that had no basis. So.
All right. Well,
how do you get that information?
I will tell you a quick story without naming names.
Okay.
But once upon a time, there was a city councilor who, outside the Sullivan Chamber, went and sort of buttonholed one of the department heads.
Yeah.
Basically, just sort of say what that councilor wanted that department head to do.
I think I've heard this story. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. And then the councilor turned to me, kind of laughed and said, we better move over here. He knows too much about the charter. Uh-huh. Right?
All right.
Because they're really not supposed to do that. What they're supposed to do is go into the council chamber, confer with their colleagues, and then have them come to some consensus to get 5 votes. And then that goes to the manager. And then the manager then directs the city department heads that you should prioritize this.
But for instance, the one on the golf course thing, everyone brought up, or that some people ever said, why didn't you consult this and that? Could they have done that? Because what you're saying is that they can't consult anybody before they put in a policy order.
They can request information, but if you think about it, even city council orders fall into categories. Some are requests for information.
True.
So even the way a city councilor seeks information properly should basically be a majority of the city council requesting that information be forwarded from such and such a department to the city council.
So maybe more of that should be done as requests rather than.
But that's really what they are. That is what they are. That's what city councils are.
But that's not how people see them.
Right. It's a form of communication
to the executive. Yeah, they see it as an order. Policy order. We order you to do this.
So they need to learn more about the charter.
Good luck on that. They need to learn more about what the city manager.
Well, but the truth of the matter is there was a time when most city councilors understood that was the role of city councilors, and that was what city councilors' orders were about.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you do have, you know, not that I'm a defender of the so-called nuclear option that you can always fire the city manager for being unresponsive, but ultimately that's what you would do if you had a city manager who was thoroughly non-responsive so much of the time that you couldn't work with him anymore. Right. You know, I don't think any rational person could make that claim about either Bob Healy, Richard Rossi, or Louis DePasquale.
Yeah.
And I would say that if you wanted to really make that case, maybe you could maybe do it with Bob Healy, who could be, you know, kind of bit of a penny pincher at times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but with each passing city manager, from Richie to Louis, they've been far more flexible, more willing to bend, more willing to dip into the till and spend more money to, you know, to basically satisfy the individual, well, I shouldn't say individual demands, but the demands of a majority of the city council, you know, as they ask it, you know, so, you know, there's been, you know, there's less pushback with each successive administration. Maybe that's part of the reason why they want to change the charter, because they just, you know, they want to go, oh, really great, we can do this. Well, let's get rid of all the authority of the manager, you know. By the way, there was at least one councillor at the that finance committee that we mentioned here said, who seemed to think, well, maybe it's time we just, you know, get rid of this entire form of government, right?
Yeah, that I'm was trying to remember because I did.
That was
Zondervan. Okay. I watch. I mean, there was a real back and forth between him and Louis, wasn't there? I mean, Louis
there was
at a point. Yeah.
I think the real problem there is there is a continuing lack of understanding about the role of councillors and the role of city manager.
But I remember the city manager, he kept saying, we listened to you. You wanted more money for affordable health. What did we do?
And you got it.
This.
And they got it.
We listened to you, but, you know, I mean, he kept bringing up that one point, but it's like, and the open space thing. Yes, we got that space by, you know, and it's all, I just felt like he probably was saying to himself, oh, I'm so glad I'm out of here.
You know, yeah, I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for the city manager who's actually bent over backwards to do more things for more people than any manager in recent history.
And given the last 2 years of COVID.
And you know, has like done a lot of this. That's right. And by the way, speaking of which, you know, doing this, you know, the though there was a little bit of shakiness on a few of the points on the bond ratings.
Yeah.
The bond rating, you know, it's usually this time of year, every year, where the city gets back its bond ratings from the three major credit rating agencies, you know, Fitch, Moody's, and Standard & Poor's. And, you know, when we are one of the rare cities in the country
that is 26 or something,
who get the highest AAA bond rating from all three rating agencies. Yeah, it's really just a few handfuls in the whole country, you know, and, you know, it's a real point of pride. And, you know, and in spite of the reputation that some people in Cambridge like to think of as the great liberal city that spends wildly, part of the reason we get the good ratings is because we are fiscally sound and you might say conservative, but not conservative in the, you know, sort of the evil way, but more meaning that we don't just throw money away. We think about it, we plan, we do things thoughtfully, we save money for a rainy day. We do all the things that the credit rating agencies like to see, you know, and we manage to provide greater services in the middle of a pandemic than most every place around. Yeah.
7 day a week testing. Who did that?
Yeah. And with a particular emphasis on the people who are most vulnerable, more so than most any place. So, you know, it's a lot to be proud of there, you know, but of course there'll always be the critics.
Oh, there were. Yeah. There were.
Yeah. So anyway, so that, you know, so usually what you do is when they do the triple A, the triple, as we say, sounds like basketball, the, you know, they go through all nine counselors going, you know, congratulations, Mr. Manager, you know, and it's like, you got to go cycle through all nine. I don't think they did that. So I think maybe that's another measure of the kind of the testiness that seems to be developing between counselors and manager, you know. Mm. And we still don't know what's going to happen in terms of the manager search, you know, or the outcome of the manager search, whether there's going to be, you know, somebody local or somebody from far away.
Have they advertised it yet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's advertised. I believe it's advertised now. And they're kind of trying to put the word around there. But, you know, I'm still always reminded of what Tim Toomey used to say, which is that ultimately, in spite of all the process, it still just takes five votes. And it would be maybe a little bit of an embarrassment if out of this entire process, they just handed a job to a familiar name and a familiar face, right? But ultimately they can do that. You know, this whole process here is, you know, is a good idea, you know, and I hope it leads to good results, but ultimately it's all about getting to five.
I happen to notice that Watertown has a city manager. I mean, again, I don't know what they're planning. So they're looking for one too. just throwing that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, I think it's
probably been, a few places.
There were a few mayors, directly elected mayors, who chose not to seek re-election, and managers who chose to walk, and school superintendents who've chosen to walk too.
That's interesting.
And I think you know, whether people want to admit it or not, you know, COVID's been tough on a lot of people, and if you're in a position of managing, you know, you. Maybe it has actually had an effect, and it's burned a few people out, and you know, and people need a break from it all. So anyway, so there were a few other things notable, I think, that maybe worth mentioning kind of briefly. There was one city. There was one item that was sitting on the table, awaiting action. That had to do with the oft-repeated desire to ban new natural gas hookups in homes, in homes and businesses, residents for heating, you know. And in fact, they really want to actually, you know, ramp it up so that not only would you not allow it in new construction, but there's some who would like to actually have it phased out even in old construction, so that eventually you'd have to get rid of your gas-fired boiler, et cetera, et cetera. So apparently there was a, there was a yet another ruling out of Mara Healey from the Attorney General's office
about Brookline,
basically, you know, amplifying a, you know, the Brookline case, where in fact the municipalities do not have that authority, and so they basically just placed the matter on file, saying, "Well, we'll have to just wait for another day to see the push it." Or, as one of the councilors pointed out, "Well, when Ms. Healey is elected governor, which may or may not happen." It's a good chance it will happen, because the Republicans haven't put up a whole lot of good quality yet. So
I'd say that about the Democrats too.
Well, I agree. I agree. So, but by default, it goes Democrat unless you have a Bill Weld or a Charlie Baker kind of candidate up there. Right. And I haven't seen one yet.
So far, no.
So, but you know, that they seem to think as governor, Governor Maura Healey would very much push to actually change things so that the state energy codes would permit municipalities to do this. We'll see. We'll see what happens, you know. But anyway, I thought it was interesting. You know, I think another matter that is still a little bit unresolved, but I think I know the answer to this, has to do with some of these other things, like the so-called Budo amendments, you know, where they want to put strict timelines on, you know, on getting to net zero, whatever.
Well, that's but why today's meeting was interesting.
Yeah, but ultimately there's, you know, there's a question here, which is that if you say, you know, MIT, you can't build that lab building unless you do it this way, but it's not possible to build the lab to the meet the specs that they demand, because it's a lab building and it just is not physically possible, then they say, well, you can just buy energy RECs, you know, renewable carbon energy losses. Credits, or purchase your energy from renewable resources, whatever, that may cost more. And fundamentally, I believe the Attorney General, whoever the Attorney General will be in the future, or any court, will eventually say, well, that's a tax, you know, because if you're imposing regulations that absolutely there's no way to get around them other than to pay a lot more, then that would inevitably be interpreted as a tax. And I think you got yet another question about exactly what the municipal authority is in that matter, which is going to have to get settled at some point.
Yeah, that came up today in the net zero report.
Yeah.
And Zondervan objected to the report changing the lab thing by 2030 to now no longer a deadline for labs. He was very upset about that. He said it should be at least 2025. And so that whole thing about labs has got to be resolved.
Well, that sounds to me like some of the people in the university community and the research community finally, you know, got through to some of the city councils.
They said, actually, even Azeem actually, I think, pointed out that that should be a different.
Well, you know, Azeem is fresh out of MIT. I think he probably has some familiarity. On the other hand, Councilor Zondervan also came out of MIT. He ought to understand.
A while ago, and maybe a different field. That could
and a different level of zeal as well.
And he's older. He's not.
Perhaps so. By the way, one thing, it was sort of a small item, happened at the end of the meeting.
Yeah.
As a late order. but I thought it was noteworthy because I kind of knew it might be coming.
Yeah.
There's a fellow named, I think his name is Wig Zamor out of Somerville, who's sort of alerting a lot of listservs about the fact that now that the Green Line extension to
Union Square
is going to be opening in like 3 weeks.
Wow. Right? Really?
Yeah. The whole line is, it'll take a while, that'll be phased in, right? But that it's coming.
Yeah.
They said that, you know, the way it's configured, you know, where it's parallel to the commuter rail tracks, it leaves open the possibility of extension of the Green Line from there out along those very same tracks, so that you could actually have, there was some have suggested a goal of one day having the Green Line extend, that branch of the Green Line extend to Porter Square. Could even go further, quite honestly, right? You know, so there was a late order basically urging the state legislature to, basically urging that this some effort and attention be paid to actually look and, you know, see if that possibility could come down the pike someday. And, you know, I don't know, you know, presidential administrations come and go, you know, big funds from Washington come in for infrastructure come and go. But, you know, if there are little pots of gold available for doing big projects that normally wouldn't happen under ordinary operating budgets, this is a pretty damn good time to actually dream big about some of the long-term possibilities that really could change things. I mean, to me, people could fight all day long about housing issues, but ultimately the housing issue is just people just in a debating club ultimately until they basically address the bigger transportation network issues, which basically opens up much, much better housing opportunities, not just within Cambridge, but also in the broader region. You know, so converting some commuter rails to ordinary T, even some of the changes in fare structures and all of that. I want to hear more of that stuff.
Yeah.
I want to hear less about bike lanes and I want to hear more about the big stuff.
Well, good luck.
That's
on
my
that.
Prayer.
Yeah. Okay. So,
anyway, all we're just about out of time.
10 seconds. Yeah. All right.
So so I guess we'll be back in another couple of weeks on
Ides of March.
At the Ides of March on Cambridge Inside Out.
Okay.